We've previously talked about the three New Testament words that are used to describe men who are commonly called elders in the Lord's church. Those three words are elders, shepherds, and overseers. In a sermon a few weeks ago, I gave particular emphasis to the word shepherd. I want to take a few minutes this morning to mention the implications in the word elder. Someone has said that observation, not old age, brings wisdom. And I think that's a wise observation. If someone is seeking to live their life honorably, walking uprightly, living a life of integrity, then maturity and wisdom will inevitably come with age. In Job chapter 12, verse 12, Job said, "Is not wisdom found among the aged? Does not long life bring understanding?" When seeking to do something or to accomplish something, we often consult others who've been there before. We may consult the internet. We may consult friends. We may consult those whom we consider to be qualified in some particular area. We may consult someone just because they are older. If you're going to train for a marathon, you would want assistance or training or guidance or leadership from someone who could give you good advice, someone who has wisdom regarding that particular goal. The usage of the word elder for a leader in the church is obviously a reference to someone who is older. And again, that's based on the understanding that someone who is older is more mature and wise. Someone who's been through this before, someone who's been around the block. This isn't their first rodeo. Elders are to be men who've lived lives of integrity, men who have conducted themselves wisely, men who can give good spiritual counsel and guidance. Elders have a responsibility to encourage, and they have the responsibility to address harmful attitudes and behaviors in the lives of members. And if the members have a desire to go to heaven, they will be grateful for such counsel, such guidance, such leadership. Can you imagine somebody training to run a race in which all the competitors who lose this race will lose their lives? But this person resents a qualified trainer offering them wise, life-saving advice and counsel on how to improve their chances of winning. They say, "It's none of your business. I can figure this out on my own. I don't need your advice. I don't need you poking around in my affairs." The book of Hebrews was written for the purpose of encouraging and exhorting Christians to keep going once they've submitted their lives to Christ. You don't win a marathon, you don't win an ultra marathon just by starting the race. Endurance is essential to attain the reward. A primary goal of the elders is to encourage each individual member to endure, to encourage each individual member to press on, to keep going. Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 3 is an excellent passage which instructs us about where to look in order to keep going. I'll read that portion of the text at this time. Hebrews 12, beginning in verse 1. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance," or endurance, "the race marked out for us, looking to," or fixing our eyes on, "Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. When encouraging these Christians to keep going, the writer of Hebrews used the familiar analogy of a race. He encourages them and us to do three things in this text. He encourages us to look within, to look at ourselves. He encourages us to look to Jesus, and he encourages us to look around at the previous winners. Verse 1, the first portion of that text says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses." After having just listed many former winners in chapter 11, he now encourages us to use their example, their witness, to spur us on to endure. One view of this passage means that those who've gone on before are watching us and witnessing what we're doing and cheering us on. But the entire 11th chapter of Hebrews was appealing to these people as those we should seek to emulate, as those who set the example. Hebrews chapter 11 is dedicated to showing Christians that many others who feared God were able to live a life of faithfulness to him. For instance, in chapter 11 and verse 4, the writer says that by the life Abel lived, he still speaks to us. Notice, I'm just going to grab a few verses, just the first portion of the verses. In verse 4, chapter 11, verse 4, "By faith Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did." Verse 5, "By faith Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death." Verse 7, "By faith Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family." Verse 8, "By faith Abraham, when called to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going." Verse 11, "And by faith even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promises," or the promise rather. Then verses 20 through 40 point to the faith of Isaac, rather, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and others as those who had faithfully completed the race. I don't believe these people are witnessing what we are doing. I don't think that's the focus in chapter 12, verse 1. I believe they are bearing witness to us that God is faithful and that he can see us through any trial just as he was faithful to them and just as he enabled them to endure such trials. Those who've gone on before are saying, "I have been where you are. It can be done." When people accomplish something, they are proof that it can be done. Ultramarathoners are runners who cover a distance of 100 miles at an average pace of 7.5 minutes per mile. They seem to do the impossible. Yet the fact that many have accomplished this feat proves that it can be done. For a long time, no one was able to break the 4-minute barrier and run a mile in less than 4 minutes. But on May 6th of 1954, Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. Immediately after that, others began breaking it on a regular basis. Why? Because everyone then knew that it was possible. Because somebody else had already done it. So the first portion of Hebrews 12:1 tells us that in order to help us endure, we need to look at the previous winners. We need to look at the faithful who have gone before. The next portion of the verse tells us that we need to look within. We need to look at ourselves. The text says, that's Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1b, "Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles." You may want to wear a heavy overcoat when it's cold outside, but if you're going to run a race, you take off the overcoat. If you're going to run a marathon, You need to get rid of anything that you're wearing that will slow you down. In preparation for the race, you need to get rid of anything in your life, things that you're doing, things that you're eating that will negatively impact your ability to finish the race. Many of these things may not be intrinsically bad. They may not be wrong or harmful in and of themselves, but if they weigh you down, if they make it more difficult for you to finish the race, they must be eliminated from your life. And finishing the race is the goal. Let us run with perseverance or endurance, verse 1c, the latter part of that verse. Let us run with perseverance or endurance the race marked out for us. Ball games are not won in the first 5 minutes. Baseball game is not won in the first inning. Well, unless somebody gets 100 home runs or something, but you know, the other guys may get more. Not likely, but you get the point. A 26-mile marathon is not won in the first 100 yards. The Christian race is not a 100-yard dash. It's a lifelong marathon. The goal of the Christian is to be faithful, to endure, to press on, to keep going. And to help us keep going, we need to, again, look at the previous winners. We need to look at ourselves. And to help us to keep going, we need to look to Jesus Christ. I'll read the text again. The focus will be on verses 2 and 3 now, but I'll start with verse 1 again. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, looking to or fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Verse 2, the first portion of that, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Footnote in the New King James says, or the originator and perfecter of our faith. New International Version says the pioneer and perfecter. The English Standard Version says the founder and perfecter. The New American Standard says the originator or leader, it has as a footnote, and perfecter. Referring to the first word translated author or pioneer, founder, originator, leader, Vine says that the word primarily signifies one who takes a lead in or provides the first occasion of anything. Looking to Jesus, the leader and perfecter of our faith. We are told to look to Jesus. Looking to means to trust. The Israelites had been bitten by snakes in Numbers chapter 21, you recall, and they were given instructions regarding how to be healed. We read in verses 8 and 9 of Numbers 21, the Lord said to Moses, make a snake, put it up on a pole. Anyone who is bitten can look at it and live. So Moses made a bronze snake, put it up on a pole. Then when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, they lived. Now I realize there's a difference between looking at something and looking to something. You look at someone or something in order to see them or examine them visually. You look to something or you look to someone for guidance or advice or to have a model for how to proceed. You can look at something out of mere curiosity. You can look at it out of contempt. You can look at it out of any number of dispositions. But when you look to something, you are seeking guidance. You're placing your trust in that thing or that person or that idea. The New International Version says, fixing our eyes on Jesus. And that makes the point quite clear. In looking to Jesus, we must ask, how did Jesus endure the cross? And the key is in the next sentence, in verse 2, which says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Jesus knew what lay beyond the tomb. And we too must learn to look beyond the trials and the problems of the present and put our trust in Jesus and his promises regarding what lies ahead. Finishing the race is the goal. And Jesus never asks us to do anything that he himself did not do. Finishing the race is the goal, and our ability to endure, our ability to keep going, will largely be determined by our attitude toward difficulties during the race. In verse 3, the two verbs grow weary and lose heart were sometimes used of runners who would relax and collapse after they'd passed the finish line. But these Christians to whom he's writing were still in the race. And so when he uses these words, these phrases, don't grow weary, don't lose heart, he's telling them and us not to give up prematurely, not to allow ourselves to faint and collapse through weariness. We need encouragement from others, and we need to encourage others to keep going. A spiritual leader will encourage you to keep going. A spiritual leader will encourage you to look at those who've gone before, whether it's to imitate their behavior or in some cases to avoid their behavior. In Romans 4:12, Paul tells us that we should walk in the steps of the faith of our father Abraham. Taking excerpts from 1 Corinthians 10, verses 5 through 11, Paul tells us that we should not follow the example of the Israelites in the wilderness. He says, with most of them, God was not well pleased. Then he says, now these became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters as some of them, nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted, nor murmur as some of them also murmured. A spiritual leader will encourage you to look at yourself. He will encourage you, in the words of Paul in 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5, to examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. And a spiritual leader will encourage you to look to Jesus. He will remind you that Christ left us an example that we should follow his steps, as Peter said in 1 Peter 2:21. And spiritual leaders are those whom we can imitate, leaders whose example we can follow. In Hebrews 13, verse 7, the writer said, remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. In 1 Corinthians 11, 1, Paul said, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Or as the New International Version says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. This is not a claim of perfection. For example, we see several instances of Peter faltering, but he always corrected himself. He always got back up and kept going. And that's something to imitate too. 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8, Paul said, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. Keeping the faith, finishing the race, is the goal. And in order to keep going, we need to look at the previous winners. We need to look at those who've gone before. We need to look within ourselves, and we need to look to Jesus.